and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Has the U.S.-Israel war of choice in Iran become a forever war, a war that cannot be won? On this edition of Crosstalk, we examine strategy. Iran has demonstrated that it is methodical and patient. It's unclear if the Trump administration has ever had a coherent strategy. Crosstalking Iran, I'm joined by my guest, Michael Scheuer in Virginia. He's the former head of the Bin Laden issue station at the CIA. In Washington, we have Riad Jarrar. He is a policy director at Democracy in the Arab World Now. And in Princeton, we have Hossein Mousavian. He is a visiting research collaborator with Princeton University and a former diplomat. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Mr. Ambassador in Princeton, if I can go to you first, after 2 months of war that Iran did not start, what is its leadership strategy? Obviously, this is in juxtaposition of what the American strategy is, if there is even one. So what is Iran's strategy 2 months in?
As I understand now, they have concluded the real issue is not a nuclear deal, because whatever concession they have been giving since JCPOA, the U.S. is asking something new and more, and most of the time very unrealistic, beyond NPT, beyond international rules and regulations. That's why in the latest proposal, they proposed the U.S., first of all, to end the hostilities, war, second, simultaneously open Strait of Hormuz and lifting the sea blockade, and then continue negotiating on the nuclear and other issues. Nevertheless, President Trump is insisting on a sea blockade, because what he said he hopes what he could not achieve during the two wars, he will be able to achieve by sea blockade, which is a total regime collapse in Iran.
Okay, let me go to Michael right now. We've known from the get-go here of this iteration of this war here that the aims and goals of the Trump administration changed, particularly very early on. And now 2 months in, it seems that the administration is considering three different tracks, and I'm going to read it to you. Continuation and expansion of the blockade. Number two, just simply declare victory and walk away. Number three, double down and continue the bombardment, the kinetic effect here. Reading the tea leaves that you have in front of you, what is this administration thinking? Because I truly believe that it has not given up on the total destruction of Iran.
I think you're right on that, but I also think that they're desperate to get out. I don't know if they will do it, but I think that the American people would think that's not a bad thing at all. It's just to get out and leave them alone. Their strategy from the beginning has been Israel's. That's they're calling the shots here. We also, you know, I haven't seen much of written about it, Peter, but I think what we're looking at here from the perspective of the West, or the United States especially, is a tremendous intelligence failure. We clearly had no idea of what the Iranians had or how they could use it. And the Israelis have paid the price at last for being what they are. And I'm not sure we have the equipment to cope with it, or the ammunition, or anything else. Certainly, we don't have the support of the American people. So I at the end of the day, I would think that the wisest course would be to get out. But as most things in this government, they change, as you said, from day to day, what they think they're going to
do.
Well,
I mean, Michael, you use an important phrase here. The wisest thing to do, but the wisest thing should have been done is not to start this thing in the first place. Right, let me go to you in Washington here. All of the options that the administration is considering are, in a sense, bad options. Walking away, the second option that I mentioned, that means it's just going to start up again in 6 months or 9 months, so nothing gets solved here. So My question to you is here, are the Americans, not to speak of even the Israelis, are they even capable of negotiations?
The problem is that there are two wars going on. There is the Israel war, which is the main one. This is a war that Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu has been dreaming about for 40 years, according to his own statements. And he dragged the United States into it. The U.S. has actually no interest in being in this war. And I think President Trump seems to have been duped into believing this is another Venezuela situation where he can go in and change the regime and put a friendly Ayatollah and leave in 24 hours. And that didn't happen. My sense is that the Trump administration and President Trump want out. This is too messy and too costly, especially in an election year for this administration. And they want out. But the problem is whether or not they will be allowed an out by the Israelis. That is the big question. You know, all the eyes are on the negotiations between the U.S. and Iran. But I think the eyes should be on the negotiations between the U.S. and Israel, because that's the real problem here.
Yeah. That's how we got into this situation in the first place. Mr. Ambassador, it's being talked about on the margins. I don't know if it's going to make it into the center of the conversation. But do you think that Iran will take proactive actions to end the blockade, meaning using kinetic action against the American fleet?
I think they will do. I mean, if Trump is going to continue the blockade for a month or two, if there is no deal, definitely I believe they will go to break the blockade, even if they go to another war.
Well, they and that's just the whole point, gentlemen, that we're in a war. The ceasefire isn't really being honored by the Americans because of the blockade. So, Michael, I'll go back to you on this, is that it seems to me because of the people that surround Trump, restarting a hot war here is an option that he's probably most favored to. Because, like I said, I mean, they have presented a supremely unable capacity to negotiate, because to negotiate would mean recognizing Iran as a legitimate interlocutor. They don't want to do that, do they?
It seems that they don't. They don't even seem to realize that Iran has been there for 2,700 years and they're not going anywhere. And it's an extraordinary situation, except the problem for America is we're run by warlords. We don't have a responsible president responsible to the people, or a Congress that's responsible to the people. They've allowed Trump and all of his successors back to Truman to become warlords. And so I don't know what the answer is. My own guess, though, is I agree with the gentleman who said that Trump, of all of them, want to get out. And the problem we have is we don't know what kind of encouragement, if we could call it that, the Israelis are going to give him to stay. You know, is the option, well, if you have to go, we'll have to use our nukes. Mm. So this requires courage, and it requires him to get rid of some people around him. You know, Peter, I think one of the greatest mistakes they made, both with Russia and with Iran, is to send two-bit real estate hustlers to represent the United States of America. And, you know, certainly the Iranians believe that those two clowns report to Netanyahu before they report to Trump, and they don't probably give Trump the whole story. So this is a mess of really unbelievable proportions. And it's another example, Peter, of America, its strategy people still living in the era of World War II.
Yep.
Send the carriers, send this, send the Air Force, and we're getting the hell beat out of us. I said before here, we haven't won a war since 1945.
All this is doing is making Iran great again, and we're going to talk about that in the second part of the program.
That's a very good point.
Riot in Washington, I'm sure you came across the op-ed piece by Mark Thiessen, basically just keep killing the leadership of Iran until you get the guy you want. I mean, okay, this is primitive thinking. We've gotten used to it, but it's become policy. I call it the Israelization of American foreign policy. Don't negotiate. Kill. I mean, this is kind of medieval, okay? There's no sense of dignity or pride or justice in this kind of approach. So this is why we have this war. Go ahead in Washington.
Yeah, I mean, it's a symptom of the destruction of rule of law under this administration and under previous U.S. administrations aided by Israel. The norms of conducting war and the laws of war that were agreed upon after World War II have been completely destroyed. Yeah. Assassinations have become a legitimate tool in the toolbox of the United States and Israel. And all actions that would have been considered war crimes and violations of international treaties, international norms, international law, have been diminished in the last few years. And decades when you look at longer picture. So unfortunately, we are living in this new reality of the way that Israel and the United States conduct war is ruthless. It doesn't spare hospitals and ambulances and civilians, and it does not spare assassinations of non-military leaders. It is a war that is, ends justify the means. This kind of war always ends up harming everyone, because if it pushes Iran and everyone else to use the same kind of equation, the United States and Israel will end up paying the same kind of heavy price that they are exerting on Iran and Lebanon.
Well, I mean, and we're going to talk about it in the second part of the program. What the world needs to do is to sanction the United States and Israel. And I mean that seriously. All right, gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on Trump's war on Iran. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing Trump's war on Iran. Okay, let's go back to Princeton. Mr. Ambassador, Israel's been brought up a number of times already in this program here, and I have a working theory about the origins of this conflict. We know the animosity in the public mind against Iran in the West. I mean, I was in high school when there was the revolution, there was the hostage crisis, and ever since then, it's just been a cottage industry of demonizing Iran. So the public was prepared for that, even though this war is extremely unpopular in the West in general, particularly in the United States, and as Michael has mentioned, during election year. But my theory of the case is the following. Trump wasn't just tricked, What I believe is the Israelis presented a case dishonestly to Trump, saying it would be an easy victory, 72 hours, decapitation, riots, et cetera, et cetera. No, they knew this was going to happen, and they knew once it happened and the United States engaged in this unprovoked illegal war, that it would be almost impossible for the Americans to get out. And they ended up being right on that point. Mr. Ambassador.
Israeli issue is not really about Iran in the region. I mean, Netanyahu publicly, officially said his strategy is greater Israel.
Right.
I mean, then we have American ambassador in Israel, which officially, again, publicly said Israel has right to occupy the other Middle Eastern countries in order to achieve greater Israel. This is not Iranian claim. This is the official statement by American official, Israeli official. That's why this strategy has been followed by Israelis, Netanyahu, for decades. And war on Iran is part of this strategy. Otherwise, the nuclear issue, if you follow from 1990, even 12 years before Iran mastered enrichment, 1990, Iran didn't have neither enrichment nor heavy water, nothing. Netanyahu and every Israeli administration since 1990 have been claiming each year that Iran is going to have nuclear bomb in a year or two and should be attacked. This is number one. Number two, I understand, we hear from many Democrats, Republicans, senators, Congress members, media saying this is not and this was not American war. But we all should remember when American General Chief of NATO in 2007 publicly revealed a sad story. He said in 2001, 2002, I was in Pentagon and they put me a plan in front of me. The U.S. will attack seven countries.
Yes. Wesley Clark. Yes.
Exactly. And the last one would be Iran. If you look at that interview, which is American general, the head of NATO, is not, I mean, very, very reliable person. And if you look at all seven countries he is mentioned in that interview, all they have been attacked. And Iran was the last one. That's why I think we need to understand the issue is not really neither about Iranian nuclear, whether we have dictatorship in Iran or human rights or democracy. The issue is much, much bigger than what we are thinking.
Mr. Ambassador, you mentioned Iran's alleged nuclear ambitions, and that's what Pete Hegseth keeps calling them. Now they have ambitions, okay? Very scary. But, Michael, this is the biggest red herring of all of it. We had the JCPOA. We had negotiations, even if it was, Dumb and Dumber was doing it. The Omanis came out and said that there is a deal on the table. It is workable. I mean, so much to the point that he went on American television and basically screamed to the skies, there is a possibility. War is not necessary. And this is why the Trump administration keeps doing this. I think it's an Israeli talking point because it has nothing to do with nuclear weapons. That's the point here. Iran has made its position crystal clear. Israel is pushing this talking point, the only country in the region that has nuclear weapons. Michael.
Yeah, I think, too, there is congressmen to take the ambassador's point. There are congressmen and senators making a noise about wanting to end the war. And they usually make those just before they get their weekly check from IPAC. So it's I wouldn't take that very seriously in any case, sir. But that's to be proven. I think the problem here, Peter, basically is we've become drunk, if you will, on our own power, our imagined power, as it seems, and also we're also drunk on democracy, and I'm one who thinks that democracy is the last bus stop on the way to tyranny, and that's the stage where America is at the moment. We have no interest in spreading democracy. It's only caused us to fight wars since 1945. And so you have two huge hurdles to get over when you try to stop this war. First, the Congress is not in favor of stopping it. If they are, it's only because they can use it in the next election. And second, the democracy screamers will come out and say, you're endangering the only democracy in the Middle East or our best ally, whatever it is. And it's just a lack of adulthood here completely. There's just nobody who is, like Putin, at least can see what the problem is and how to manage it. There's nobody here like that at the moment.
Well, Michael, all I'd say to these the democracy industry people is that the last three Democratic primaries were truly undemocratic, so they should stop talking about democracy around the world. I mean, if a democracy commits genocide, then what is democracy for, okay? I mean, it's really tiresome, and the whole world knows it. Democracy is a procedure. It is not a religious belief. Only people in the Beltway talk that way. Nobody else really cares. Ryan, let me go to you. You know, talking about the lack of maturity, Donald Trump came out with on his social media, Truth Social, and he came out as kind of a cartoon carrying a gun, and he's just saying, just give up. I mean, what kind of foreign policy is that? I mean, it's just, you know, I suppose it's just trying to confuse people, or just this tells us a lot about his state of mind and the people that are around him. I don't even know what to make of it anymore.
I mean, honestly, it's not that different than the United States foreign policy in the last few decades. Mm. It is less sophisticated. The United States policy during previous presidents had more bells and whistles and masks and colorful slogans about, you know, spreading democracy and human rights and protecting the American people from some evil out there. This administration is just raw greed and imperialism. So I don't think it's a dramatic shift from U.S. foreign policy in the past maybe 30 or 40 years, but it is a dramatic shift in messaging. It is very raw. It's very direct. We saw the messaging on Venezuela that just said very clearly, we are there to steal the oil. And now with Iran, it's very similar. It is a war that demands that the Iranian people would surrender to the powers to be. I don't think it's a shift in actual policy, but President Trump is too arrogant and not smart enough to mask it the way that we have seen it before. And I think it is definitely making it easier for people in the U.S. and around the world to see the real roots of U.S. intentions and U.S. Position in engaging with the rest of the world. And Iranians will say no to surrendering. No one will say yes to surrendering.
Speaking of Iran, let me go back to the ambassador in Princeton. I have a prediction, and I usually stay away from predictions, but I think one day in Iran, people will thank Donald Trump for making Iran great again, because Iran now, it has cards, everybody, it has a lot of good cards to play here. And it is breaking out of the box, the prison that the United States and Israel has put in Iran for the last 47 years. Iran is going to return to its proper place in the geopolitical order, a great power, and rich at that, Mr. Ambassador.
First of all, Peter, the reality is that the U.S.-Israeli war on Iran has damaged Iran hundreds of billions of dollars. Mm-hmm. And this is the reality. And if there is no deal, Iran will face much more domestic economic situation that they have had before war. Nevertheless, this war has had big consequences on the Iranian domestic policy, and even I think in the region. In domestic policy, when the country was able to resist two wars launched by the most powerful army in the world, perhaps in the history of mankind, to bring regime collapse, while they were able to resist, this has created enormous self-confidence in Iranian domestic, whether this is security or military, even public opinion. Maybe you do not hear in Western media since April 28, when the U.S. attacked Iran, Israel attacked Iran, every night in many cities, yes, thousands of people come during night till morning, defending, sloganing for resisting the U.S., fighting the U.S., and so. But I think the lesson is for the region is beyond Iran. Because now Iranian neighbors, they see and they feel that Israel, as the only country in the Middle East with nuclear weapon, is attacking Iran, which does not have nuclear weapons.
All right, Mr. Ambassador, I'm sorry, I have to interrupt you. We've run out of time. Fascinating, and I hope to have you come back to continue the conversation. I want to thank my guests in Washington, Virginia, and in Princeton. And, of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, crosstalk rules.